Hello, everybody. It is time to find out what is happening right now in the art world. If you would like to grow as an artist and you can't take an art class, we've got everything you need here at ArtProf: critiques, tutorials, professional development, and workshops. This is what has been happening recently. This was a little ways back, but Faith Ringgold, one of my favorite artists, passed away recently. And she was so many things as an artist. She was a painter, sculptor, performer, weaver, writer, social justice activist. And what she did was portray images of African Americans in Harlem and the urban childhood that they had. And so she did lots of painted narrative quilts, and you can see that they all have urban landscapes. But what was so frustrating about her career is that the art world largely ignored her for decades. And she taught art in a public school. She did a mural for the Women's House of Detention at Rikers Island, and she organized protests against the exclusion of Black artists in museums. And it really wasn't until 2016 that MoMA acquired many of her major works. And it's an example of how specific the art world is about what they want, because I got to hear her speak in person. She was one of the keynote speakers at the Southern Graphics Council conference, the conference that I just got back from. I heard her speak in 2004, and there's one thing she said that really stuck with me. And now in retrospect, seeing her work, it makes even more sense. She said, as an artist, you have to outlast everybody. And you can imagine she just recently passed away at the age of 93. And that's very late in her life that the art world decided to acknowledge her. And that's what she did. She outlasted everybody. Isn't that just extraordinary that she was doing all of these incredible things, such a prolific artist, and yet it took decades for the art world to really recognize her for who she was? And unfortunately, this is not uncommon. We did a stream a little ways back about ageism in the art world. And there is this unfortunate trend of women artists being recognized very late in life, in their 90s. And it frustrates me because, you know, these women, they've been around for decades. Why do we have to wait till they're 95 to recognize them within the art world? So tell me in the chat, how many of you here have heard of Faith Ringgold? How many of you have never heard about her before? Because to me, she's so much more interesting than a lot of other artists in museums. And actually, what's interesting is that this painting, you have to look it up because it's very wide, actually, which doesn't really fit this vertical format. But MoMA did hang this piece right opposite Picasso's Demoiselle d'Avignon, which is one of his most famous pieces. And the New York Times had a photo of Picasso's painting right next to Faith Ringgold's. I mean, maybe it's because I've seen Picasso's painting 18 billion times, but to me, hers is so much better. It has so much more emotion, and it has an incredible composition. I mean, just this little slice that I'm showing all of you, it's a really almost shocking piece. It really slaps you against the face. But given the themes that she talks about in her work, to me, it's totally appropriate. So we have a couple of people here who have engaged with Faith Ringgold's work. George says, saw a small show of her work a couple of months ago at the Worcester Art Museum, really liked the story quilts. Yeah, the story quilts have just so much richness to them, full of patterns and subtle colors. I mean, just this little slice alone, you have these extraordinary figures with so much liveliness. But then look at the way she portrays the bridge. So much depth and atmosphere, even like these little cars that are underneath the figures and their shoes, and then the layering of the bridge. Really incredible composition. And the one from BK says, Tar Beach was my introduction to Faith Ringgold. Oh, and Karasu says, when I watched Nick Jr. as a kid, there used to be segments of Faith Ringgold's children's books between episodes. That's another thing, is that she wrote children's books. Not that many people in the international museum scene are doing something like that. And actually, I didn't know she was a public school art teacher until I read her obituary, but it totally makes sense to me because of the way she truly engage with the public in a way that a lot of these other artists have not. I had no idea that they showed that on Nick Jr. And BK says, learned way later that she had other work. Yeah, look up her work, everybody, because I'm not able to obviously show the scope of who she is, but I don't know many artists who do as many things as well as she does. And her protests against the exclusion of Black artists, she was way before her time. There has been more of an effort recently in the art world to show and acquire works by Black artists, but that's just in the past couple of years. And she was doing that way before. Amanda says, Ringgold is a stick of dynamite that was so needed in the context of art history. Love her. And she was a great speaker. Oftentimes, they get these fancy, famous artists to speak at these conferences, and some of them are not that good. Like, even the ones who are extremely high up on the food chain, sometimes they're really not that interesting. But she had a presence and depth. You could hear the history in her voice. And as a young artist, I was probably 28 at the time, I just really appreciated those words because they felt so comforting to me that there was something I could do that was in my control if I just stick around. And that has been very important to me in my career, that I have had the persistence to stick around even when things get really rough, which they do for every artist. And I always go back to those words, because a lot of people will quote artists, and that's fine, but it's so different when you hear somebody say something. We can read quotes all day, but I remember her voice. I remember the way she said it. She said it very slowly, but there was a grand quality to the way that she spoke, which I just thought was extraordinary. Some of them are paintings, for example. This piece is a painting, but this piece and this piece are both quilts. And again, look up her work because there's just so much to see. I suspect, unfortunately, Janice, that probably was the case, that quilts equals, quote, women's work, not important according to the patriarchy. And I just find that extraordinarily frustrating because somebody brought this up at the recent Q&A hangout about art versus craft, that there's this debate about oh, this is craft, this is art. And I just don't think it's that straightforward. And this idea that people have this inherent bias against a whole genre of work, I think is just absurd. Let's just evaluate the work for what it is. Let's not try to label it and say it's this, and therefore it is less relevant. Karasu says, watch the Faith Ringgold episode of the series Getting to Know the World's Greatest Artists about Faith Ringgold. She's a large part of Black artists who became respected in the art world. She was so ahead of her time, and it frustrates me so much that it took that long for the art world to recognize what she did. Oh, this is a good point. Lisa says teaching probably trained her for speaking with clarity. Absolutely. I learned to speak by teaching. I was so quiet in high school. You guys wouldn't even recognize me. I didn't want to talk to anybody. And teaching is what brought me out of my shell, because you can't not talk when you're an artist. And we also have Carolyn, who says, I really haven't heard of any contemporary artists outside of Art Prof. I'm dreadful at remembering names. People ask me a lot, how do I get to know what's happening in the contemporary art world? Because it's a lot. The art world is gigantic, and there are different pockets of the art world. So my recommendation for anybody here who is looking to expand their knowledge of contemporary art, my recommendations would be to read the New York Times, because they have a significant arts listing. And so all the major museum and gallery and art fair shows, they will be covered by the New York Times. I think they probably have the most comprehensive one. I do really like reading the New Yorker, because they always have at least one article that is substantial about art, and they also have gallery listings. So I always look at them. But then it's also good to look at other smaller publications. For example, I really like Hyperallergic. I think they are subscription-based, but they're excellent, and they will tend to cover some of the smaller shows. For example, the Whitney Biennial, I can't remember if it's over, but it was recent. The Whitney Biennial is gonna get covered. We don't worry about that. But Hyperallergic will cover some of the smaller, let's say, Brooklyn shows or something. And they also write articles about issues in the art world. And then the other one would be ArtNet. ArtNet is more global. I don't think it's much bigger than Hyperallergic, but they will be more specific. New York Times is sort of like the big stuff. And so that's a good way to go about doing that. Slate says that supposedly because craft doesn't have any ideas, whereas art does. It's not true. Anytime people are making things, they embed their ideas in them. Yeah, and who's to say that, oh, this person is deep because they're painting, and this person who is weaving baskets is not. I just don't like sweeping generalizations that people make about certain type of artists. And that people judge that, oh, this is more valuable because this person was thinking about this. And I know a lot of artists do worry about that. We have a stream called Does My Art Need Deep Meaning? So I'd be curious in the chat if any of you have ever felt pressure that, oh, my work doesn't engage deeply enough with social issues, or if you have felt that if you want to paint something for a very simple purpose, for example, I saw this beautiful flower today, I'm going to paint it, that somehow that's less. Because you know what? There's a lot of flower paintings in museums right now. And the next piece of news, I am proud to say that I was asked for my opinion on NPR from Scott Simon. This is on NPR Weekend Edition on Saturday. And some of you may have heard that there was an artist who was on the museum staff at the Pinakothek der Moderne in Munich, in Germany. And apparently a museum worker decided to hang up his own artwork in the museum. He was fired. And he was part of the technical services team. And so people didn't think he was, say, breaking into the museum. And he drilled some holes into the wall, hung up his work. And he was quoted as saying he hoped it would be his, quote, artistic breakthrough. And he is now, I believe, facing charges because he did do property damage to the museum. He did drill a bunch of holes in there. And so I was feeling very validated that NPR wanted to know what I thought. And honestly, it's so petty, but the first thing that went through my mind is, academia, I don't need you. NPR values my opinion. So I'm wondering what people thought about this, because I read the article and I laughed. It's such a good chuckle. I know that's not necessarily what I should be thinking, because I mean, he did deface a museum, which I'm never ever going to condone. And I know the museum is worried about copycat artists doing similar things in other places. And that is a serious thing. Like, it is really hard to run a museum. And these acts that have been happening recently, people doing things in galleries, and I do not envy any museum director right now who has to deal with security. When I went to MoMA recently, I could not believe how comprehensive the security was. Long time ago, I would go to a museum and you just walk in. I mean, maybe they would check your bag or something like that. But when I went to MoMA, I mean, they were doing that thing across my body and they were checking all bags, not just some. And I definitely noticed that was a big difference. So the thing about this is Banksy has done this before. And Banksy did this at MoMA. I think he did it at the Tate Britain. And so this is not the first instance of this happening before. And apparently when Banksy does it, it's fine because he's part of the art establishment. And that's part of his thing, is that nobody knows who he is. And he makes work that just appears without any announcement. I don't know if people saw, but I think it was a couple of years ago, Banksy had a piece that was up for auction. I can't remember if it was Sotheby's or if it was Christie's, but the piece shredded itself and nobody knew this was gonna, it just did it. And so everybody turned around and the Banksy piece, it was shredding in front of them. I don't know the mechanics of how that actually worked, but everybody flipped when they saw this happening. And so I find this interesting that people are bringing up Banksy in light of this thing that happened with the museum worker. And so I'm wondering, did you guys get a chuckle out of this? I mean, part of me did, but another part of me was frustrated because it is disrespectful to what museums do, which I think is extremely important. I think museums are more important every day. And sometimes I don't think we think about the service that they are doing for history and society as a whole. So many people, myself included, most of the time when we see art, it's on a phone. And I talked about this in the NPR article. And when you're looking on a phone, it's too easy to just swipe, swipe, swipe. But when you're in a museum, you can't do that. You have to physically walk through galleries. And I'm in such a different place when I see work in a museum. You really appreciate for what it is, because on a phone, everything is this big. And when you see the grandeur of, let's say, that incredible Faith Ringgold painting, I don't know exactly the dimensions, but it's gotta be at least 10 feet wide, if not longer than that. Let's go back to some of the comments so I can catch up a little bit and throw in some comments about the museum worker. Did you get a good chuckle like me? What was your reaction to what happened? Because that was my first thing, is I just was like, what? It was really sort of funny. But then when I stepped back and started to think about it, I thought, okay, this is, if it gets other artists to do this, this is a really bad thing. TJ says, as somebody struggling with gender identity and doing a show about it, yes, so much pressure to make work on important issues. Now, that work is incredibly important. I mean, there are extraordinary pieces of art throughout history that have brought visibility to issues that otherwise would not, that have called attention to voices that are underrepresented. And that work is very, very important. However, there's another flip side that sometimes people get that pressure that they have to do that. And I've talked to people who have said to me, I feel like I need to do that. And I said, well, is that really your story to tell? And they'll say, well, I don't know anything about it. I'm like, well, then don't. Because we do have another stream about cultural appropriation. Look up Art Prof Cultural Appropriation and you guys will find the stream. But we talk a lot about, well, whose story is it to tell when it comes to social issues? In the case of Faith Ringgold, she was making work about the experience of an African-American urban childhood in Harlem. And that is part of her identity. This is not a story coming from somebody else. This is speaking from her voice and her experience. And we also have some more comments. Uni says, if you don't accept quilts as art, most likely you haven't experienced enough quilts. Absolutely. And that's, again, visibility. If people aren't seeing the quilts, they are not able to appreciate it. And that's why representation matters so much in the art world, is that we have to see the work. If the work is not seen, nobody can really see that. Alan says, sometimes find myself having to say myself, it's okay, it's just for practice, doesn't have to be a grand piece. I would say the vast majority of the time, I'm not making a grand piece. For me, that's the exception. If I'm making some grand project, that is oftentimes not the case for me. But I do think that there are pieces that serve different purposes. You could say, okay, well, I'm doing this because I want to practice. It's not because I want to make a finished piece. And that's fine. Not every work has to be finished. I tell people that probably only 20% of what I make actually gets done. Although lately it feels like it's more like 5%. But the point is, there's too much emphasis on creating finished pieces. They're not as important as we think they are. Yeah, Kendra says, just having this conversation on a jazz channel, you have to just do it because you like to do art, live in the moment. Yep. And sometimes we cannot explain why we make something, why we like something, and that's okay. Work can be totally spontaneous. I'm a big planner, but that's me in the moment. And we also have, oh, it was Sotheby's. Okay, thank you very much, Mystical Wren. Gosh, Lisa, this is so true. I roll my eyes when the artwork description includes lots of long words ending in ology. That's so true. And the thing is, sometimes I swear they're making up the word or it's some extremely obscure. I had this painting teacher at RISD. Her word was psychological. So she'd always talk about, what is the psychological impact of this piece? And you could even see it in her artist statement. She would say, the psychological depth of, I was like, oh my God. If you just removed the word psychological, maybe your artist statement would make a lot more sense and sound less pompous. Oh, okay. Thank you, Kendra. He put his art up and played Baby, I'm a Star by Prince. This is Banksy. I'm so happy that you are all doing the research for me because I would like to be a journalist, and I have been feeling like one recently, which is kind of fun because I've always had this silly fantasy of being a journalist, and I'm sort of trying to incorporate it into what we do here at Art Prof. Thank you for providing that point of view, Kathleen. I work in a museum. Acts like this are unacceptable. Absolutely. It's defacing a space, and museums to me are sacred. they preserve history and the scholarship that has to happen, the attention to history that is required. I don't know if some of you read my post, but I'm trying to worm my way into the Getty somehow. And I did send some emails to their Conservation Institute because I really wanted to see if I could film there, because, oh, I would love to see that process. But we haven't really had the ability to make, well, not the ability. We haven't had a chance to really connect with anybody in conservation. And I would love to do that. And then I've sent those emails. I was like, I feel weird about this, because I had a plan to contact all the curators and just ask them. And then one of you, I'm sorry, I don't remember the name, somebody commented on Instagram. They said, you should just contact the Getty and the Huntington on Instagram, tell them what you do. And when they wrote that, I said, I'm going to do it, because I know this. No skin off your back to ask for things. They just say no. And yet I had that moment of hesitation, I guess, because I just worried that I'm not going to look legitimate. You guys, I hope, know that I'm legitimate. But this is where I'm like, I really wish I had a press pass, like something that would just get me instant verification. But I'm going to work on it. And I do have somebody in marketing who's helping with me writing out an email, so it's not like, oh, I am a person, I got a YouTube channel. It sounds really, really dumb. And okay, so George got a laugh at it taking a while before anyone noticed it was there. Guess it wasn't too bad, the artwork. Yes, they didn't catch it right away, which you can laugh a little bit about, but I mean, unless you're a museum worker and you know that gallery well, chances are people are not going to catch that. And Carolyn says, I feel like I have to give myself permission to do silly art. A little art snob in the back of my brain says it's shallow of me, but note to self, you are allowed to do zillions of acrylic pours. Art has so many different ways to be made. And another thing that has always stuck with me, some of you may have seen those shorts with Andrew Raftery, my RISD professor, the one about the soft pastels that really do look like Cheetos and carrots. And we also did one that was about his ceramic plate and the student artwork that looks like a mask keypad. You can look it up on our Schwartz channel. And actually, I'm doing it today. I'm releasing Andrew Raftery's watercolor video. Oh, it was shot in, oh God, 2022. But it's coming out. It really is. I'm doing the sound mix right now. And Mystical Ren says, years ago, I met a woman who said she's a textile artist. I was like, huh? Her work was amazing. That was the first time I realized that art is not just fine art. Oh, absolutely not. And I think especially with social media, that has shifted quite a bit, that people actually have agency for how their work has been seen. Well, here's an argument from Jen, which I think a lot of people would sympathize with. I love museums, but they can be a bit elitist. I respect this guy trying. I understand there are a lot of people who you will hear, I feel intimidated by museums, or I don't know how to look at art, and they feel that they're not qualified somehow to appreciate the work. But I disagree with that. I think anybody who can walk into a museum, or anybody in the world, I'm not just saying the people in the museum, everybody in the world who sees art and can formulate an opinion, that is valid. Because we hear that all the time in our Discord. People will come into the critique channels and they'll be worried that, oh, I don't really feel like I critique the other pieces here, because we do have a rule that for every artwork you post for critique, you do have to leave 3 comments, critique comments for other artists. And that's to make sure that people don't just post and run. So, you know, if you post in our critique channel, you will get substantial comments. And we tell people you can't just write a sentence. You have to write something substantial that actually goes in depth. And so people will say, well, I don't think I'm a very good artist. I don't think I am allowed to comment on somebody that has better technique. And I think any artist you will ask, and maybe you guys can tell me in the chat, will appreciate any opinion. I mean, as long as it's a respectful one. I mean, somebody's being a jerk, obviously, you should dismiss that. But I just think most artists, we are so appreciative of being seen, of somebody acknowledging and taking the time to think about our work more than 2 seconds. And I just think usually when we get comments from people that are thoughtful, we appreciate it. We don't care if you can't render a pair. We just want to be seen. And I almost feel like while I am not happy with that museum worker, I understand that fundamental desire to be seen. I think all artists have that. And tell me in the chat if that is something that is relevant for you. And Amanda, when are you going to hit 200,000 subs? I know, we're really close. On Instagram, I'm waiting for us to hit 100K. We're very, very close. Okay, let's go on to the next piece of news. And I threw this one in there last minute, so it's not in the video description. But the Venice Biennale is happening right now, and it's an international show. It's one of the most prestigious exhibitions. And the way it works is that countries have artists that represent them. I believe this year there were 85 countries represented at the Venice Biennale. And tell me in the chat, who here has heard of the Venice Biennale? And so they give an award, which is called the Golden Lion. And so Archie Moore, who's an indigenous Australian artist, won this top prize. And Archie Moore created this huge installation. It's called Kith and Kin, and it has 3,484 names. It's basically a monumental family tree. It's all drawn in chalk, and it goes back 65,000 years of family history. And so if you look at the work, you can see this is the scale. This is Archie Moore right here. But if we go back to this image, you can see it's extraordinary. And they're all hand-drawn in chalk. And there are actually a bunch of names, they said, that are not legible, that have been smudged a little bit. And then the white blocks that you see at the bottom, that is a table, which is covered with stacks of government documents related to the deaths of Indigenous Australians in police custody. So here's another image. This is a different piece of Archie Moore. And then here you can see a little bit better. This is just a little piece. This image makes it look tiny, but it's good because you can go up close. If you guys look at the upper left-hand corner of the image, you will see this almost circular motion. So that is an area where some of the chalk names have been smudged out. And I was thrilled to learn about this artist. I had never heard of his work before. And this idea of a family tree, which is, oh my gosh, I cannot imagine. And the thing is, this has to be made on site. At least I think it is. I have to look it up. But I can't imagine that you can transport this. I mean, it looks to me from the images that it's on a wall, and that's not uncommon at the Venice Biennale, that artists will go and create work on site. I know Sarah Z did that many years ago when she was in the Venice Biennale, and I'm extremely jealous because I believe Lauren is going to be in Venice while the Biennale is still up. Oh my God, that would be an amazing trip. I hope someday I have enough funding to be able to go to a show like that, because I've never seen a show on that scale before. And I've never been to one of those gigantic art fairs like Art Basel. And so I'd love to go to some of those places because I've never really had that experience. But that's one of the things about these biennales is that they show you just how gigantic the art world is. And again, another place where representation really, really matters. Tell me in the chat, have you heard of Archie Moore, Indigenous Australian artist? Or if you have never heard of him, I did not hear about him until I looked at the New York Times. Like I literally just found this, I think 2 days ago. And it was really great to see that. And here's a good point, going back to museums, and I think this includes galleries as well. Museums should have areas for new and local artists to show their work. Well, that was something I mentioned in the NPR video, not video, article. I was talking about how sometimes it does feel like it's the same 25 artists that all the museums are showing, because there is a huge gate that you have to be able to enter. Somebody has to open that gate for you. And a lot of the times it's extremely difficult for artists who do not have those connections, the networking, because the whole thing about a museum is that to be shown in a museum, like a major museum, I'm not talking about small regional ones, you have to know a curator. It starts there. If you don't know a curator, you can't get in. The curators are the ones who are responsible for acquiring works for the collection, for putting the work in the exhibitions. I mean, I think that's why oftentimes local nonprofit arts organizations are extremely important, because those are places for new and local artists to show their work. And I think as a gallery director for 4 years, I understand why people in museums don't do that, because it's a ton of work. I mean, it would basically be like adding a gallery to the museum. And so what I would do instead, everybody, support your local arts organizations, because they are the ones that I think really do offer those kinds of opportunities. And yeah, Lauren is going in May. And yes, we are going to film some shorts over there. I wish I could go with her, but yeah, I'm going to LA. I'm going to try to infiltrate the Getty. Let's see if I can actually do it. Maybe that should be my dare for the month, is see if I can get into the Getty. Because it is so different when you get to visit a place, you get to talk to somebody. I mean, sure, there's places I can just go by myself. I can just film there, which is fun. But it's so different when you get to talk to somebody who's part of that. Yes, I would like for you to gather money for me to go to Art Basel, because the Art Basel, the art fairs, they're just such spectacles. And granted, I've never been there before, so I'm not feeling like I can render judgment on it, but it's like marketing exponentially created. And it's sort of like the opposite of all of the more, I guess, less commercially oriented, where it's like super commercial work. It's like the glitzy galleries, which isn't really my cup of tea, but I'm sort of fascinated by it at the same time. Yeah, and if anybody has suggestions for places you'd like me to go, I was actually looking at the, I think it's the New York City Antiquarian Book Fair. I think it's in April. So that is one, because, oh, they're going to have illuminated manuscripts. That's my thing. I took a class on illuminated manuscripts when I was at RISD, and oh, I love those. And then there's another conference in January, which is for art retailers and manufacturers. So that's another one that I've got on my radar. But again, if there's any big event that you think I could go to and film that experience, I love that. By the way, tell me in the chat, because I'm not remotely done posting all of the Southern Graphics Council printmaking conference I've only posted, I think, maybe 20% of what I shot, much more to come. How many of you have been enjoying those on-site event-based videos? Because I love doing them. I love bringing you to places that are close to the public. For example, a lot of people really enjoyed the reels about the RISD Materials Lab. That was the one about snail poop, and there was like blood leather and all these strange things. But that's not open to the public. You have to be a RISD alum or student or faculty to be able to access that. So that's my thinking, is if I can get more budget to go to these places, I can show you these places that are normally closed to the public. People are asking me about lithography, wanting to see a litho demonstration in a video. And I'm like, hey, I got two people in Boston who are incredible printmakers, one of whom is a lithographer. We call her the Litho Queen, Carolyn Muscat. And I did interview her at the conference, so I'm hoping to post that. But if I can get on a plane to Boston, you guys can send me. I'll be right there at her print shop documenting everything. So I'm hoping this is almost like a new model for how we can produce content, because it's really, really fun. Yes, I don't want to get arrested, but I did get yelled at by a museum guard. I didn't get yelled at. I was just trying to be dramatic. DT was like, he just asked you politely, Clara. I'm like, yes, I know I stepped over this line. Claudia says, if Faith Ringgold had to do that to get visibility, would it have been treated differently or the same? I don't know that I can comment on a hypothetical situation, but I just think fundamentally the museum worker thing, it's just so disrespectful. I mean, how can you be an artist and feel that that's something you can do? I would never have the gall to do something like that. I just think it's so disrespectful. And yeah, like Karasu says, indie art supply store in my area has a gallery space. Once I have more pieces, I'm going to apply. Do it. Crystal says, but are the curators from these large museums visiting local or regional galleries? A lot of them do. I didn't say that they would go everywhere, but this is also where, for artists, the ball can be in your court. You can't do everything, but I can tell you there's a lot of artists who express frustration to me, understandably so, about the lack of those opportunities. And I'm not saying this will fix it. I'm just saying this is one thing that's in your control, is to make those connections. Honestly, if you can find a curator on Instagram, follow them, comment on their posts. After a while, people notice. We have such a big platform, but you know something? The people that comment a lot and who write thoughtful, kind comments, I know their names. I know who's making, and you wouldn't think I would, but I do, because I read all comments. I don't respond to them all because I can't, but you start to see that. And the other thing too is you can be sneaky, because you know what? On the Getty site, I feel like this is some little Mission Impossible that I'm trying to put together for the Getty, but I could find some staff names because on some of the areas. So you just have to figure out what is the email structure. So I believe it's like clu@getty.edu. It's something like that. And so then you just find the curator name and you do jsmith@getty.edu, and it's worked. I have been able to get people's emails that way by guessing. Yeah, I really hope so too. I'll be bummed, but I will not be surprised, because it's personal connection. You have to find somebody who either reads their email from people they don't know and who's open-minded enough to think that that is a good thing. Because even though I think somebody said earlier that yes, museums have social media that they want to promote, I think oftentimes, unless you have a ton of experience being online, it's hard to understand what is really going to resonate with people. Because I've watched a couple of museum reels from various museums, and a lot of them, I'm sorry, just from a technical filming point of view, I'm not talking about the content, a lot of them, I'm like, oh my God, could you make this more boring? Like, this is an incredible piece of art, but the cinematography is not good. Like, they have this thing where they have the curator talking about the work, but the curator is just standing there. Or they show images of the work, but it's like from another place. It's not pictures of the exhibition. I could go on and on. But what I'm trying to say is that I think their reels could be better, but they don't always know to appreciate the casualness of the way our films are reeled, whatever that work means. Claudia says, if you hear yourself, are you saying the work has to be seen? So the desperation of a museum worker, artist to be seen. That's one theory. How could you do that and not know you're going to get caught? I mean, he knew that was going to happen. So I think it does read as like a stunt, but actually a lot of, I believe all the news organizations are not publishing his name because they don't want to give him more publicity for doing something like that, which I really understand. Yeah, sorry, I'm not going to a Taylor Swift concert. I am going to Erin Debate in LA though. That's going to be really, really fun. Yes, I like being your vicarious lens. Okay, so Catherine says, access to museum and gallery art stores where they store all the pieces that aren't on display. Oh, I would love that, to go into museum storage. But I think a big part of it is permissions, like what they're allowed to film. That's the other thing, is there's sort of a big hump there that prevents a lot of things from being filmed. Yeah. This does happen in some museums. Cleveland Museum of Art used to have a juried show for Cleveland area artists. I entered once, didn't get in. DeYoung in San Francisco has started doing something similar. Yeah, the regional museums are excellent. There's a museum in Massachusetts called the Cordova, and they have fantastic exhibitions. And I believe they have a biennial that is all local artists. That's really, really good. And Edie's asking about kitchen lithography, where aluminum foil is a printing plate. Is that much different than using an aluminum sheet? I've never done kitchen lithography, but the aluminum foil is not the same thing as an aluminum plate. An aluminum plate has to be specially prepared with a certain surface, and it's a whole different processing method in terms of the acid and everything. For example, in aluminum plate lithography, you have to use this awful thing. It's called V-etch lacquer, and it's red and goopy and gross, and it's so bad for you. They talk about, you have to have ventilation. If you have ventilation, you're okay, but it's so bad. Like, there are all these scary signs about how bad it is. Maybe they have a substitute now, but that's what I was using when I was in art school. And Just Kendra says, Getty has a scholars program. Are you looking to exhibit? I don't know if that's for me. I'm not exhibiting much anymore because honestly, it's kind of boring compared to what I get to do here with you. Oh yeah, absolutely, Artisina. Litho video would have to be multiple. Been learning litho. It's complicated overall. Printing litho is easier than etching. It depends. Litho is just, you need so much expertise, and it's a very unforgiving material. The grinding of the stone, that's the thing I cannot stand, because you have to grind it so precisely, and I can't even get into it. It would be like an hour for me to explain it to all of you, but yeah, I mean, I'd have to film hours and hours of footage to show something comprehensive, because I have noticed that there are a lot of printmaking videos online. There's some, I mean, not compared to say painting, drawing videos, but what I have noticed is a lot of them don't explain it. A lot of them, it's a time lapse, or they mention parts. And you guys know me, I can't do anything halfway. So if I'm gonna produce a video on lithography, I'm gonna produce it. But again, budget and time, those are the two things. If I get the budget, that will make it happen. That's basically what this comes down to. And citric acid, I've never used that before. Interesting. Actual printing. Okay. I was like, I don't think that's This is a, I don't know what citric acid is, but I don't know that that would work on processing stone lithography. Oh, glass blowing. Maybe I need to find an excuse to go up to the, is it called the Museum Glass? There's a glass museum in Seattle. Oh, that would be so fun. That's an amazing museum. Actually, you know what I really want? I want to do an Wyeth Family Museum tour, because they have, I think there's an NC Wyeth Museum. I can't remember if it's Philly or Pittsburgh, but there's also the Farnsworth Museum, which I believe has his studio, and that's in Maine. I was like, oh my God, if I could just go to those two places and do it, Wyeth Family, oh, that would be amazing. Yeah, if you guys have ideas for places for me to go, let me know, because some of these places are more expensive than others. For example, my trip to LA is not that much, because plane ticket to LA is not much, and I'm staying with Jordan, so it's not like going to the Netherlands, which is a really big trip. Maritsaki says, what's the difference between an art fair and art exhibition? Would taking part in an art fair count in an artist's CV as exhibiting? It's confusing because people use the same terminology to explain very different things. So for example, Mia has been doing lots of art fairs. Sometimes people call them art and craft fairs, it depends, but that's where you get a table, you can show your work. I know they have stuff like that at, say, Comic-Con. They'll have places where artists can set up and sell their work. Now, that's more like a local art fair thing. Now, a global art fair is usually this gigantic monster of a show, and you have to go through a gallery. So you can't just register. You would have to have representation from a gallery, and it's a major gallery. I'm not talking about like little local ones. Big New York City galleries, and each gallery has a booth, and they usually have a bunch of artworks by various artists. If you guys look up Art Prof Future Fair, you will find a video of me and Lauren going to an art fair in New York City. It's a very small one. It's not like Art Basel or anything like that, but it will give you a sense of the layout of that. And oh yeah, street art and murals outside. Yeah, that would be fantastic. And Nolly says, any fixatives for alcohol inks that can prolong light fastness? I am not the alcohol ink expert, so maybe people in the chat can help you out. Okay, the last artist we're going to talk about is Julie Meritu, and she has an exhibition right now. It's called Julie Meritu Ensemble, and it's at the Palazzo Grassi in Venice. And she, I guess, was invited to do a solo retrospective, but chose not to do a solo retrospective. And instead, she has decided to present her work alongside her artist friends. Because one thing that she said that I thought was so true is that with her artist friends, she's had conversations about the work. And I interpret this as her really contextualizing the work that she does. And her work is, this is about as monumental as it gets when it comes to painting. And Julie Meritu's partner, Jessica Rankin, former partner, is also in the show. And her work is these intricate embroidered pieces that she does. And Julie Meritu is, I mean, she's at the very top of the food chain in the art world. She went to MacArthur. She's been in all the major museums. And I just thought that was really interesting that a lot of people would not turn down the opportunity to have a solo retrospective at such a major venue. And yet she opted to not do that. I would theorize that because she is so well known, probably has done many solo retrospectives, and bringing in her artist friends into part of this conversation, it makes sense to me, because I don't think anybody creates artwork in isolation. I think we see what other people around us are doing, and whether we are trying to actively do that or not, they do influence the work we do. And I remember in art school, there are a lot of artist friends I had, and I would find myself doing similar things or seeing something cool that they made that I wanted to try. And so I think unless you're really working in complete isolation, which I don't think a lot of people do anymore because of all the online options. I mean, there are people for sure. Like, for example, I just love the New York Times had this article about Frank Auerbach a little ways back. He's a contemporary British painter, and he's been around since the 70s. He's probably in his 90s now. But one of the things they said is that he doesn't have a TV. He doesn't have a phone. He doesn't do anything. So he's probably one of the few artists who really is making work in isolation. But his contemporaries were Francis Bacon and Lucian Freud. And so he really never did make work in isolation. I sort of suspect he's not now. But I love this idea that the artwork is a conversation, that artwork is never made in a vacuum, that the people that surround us are the ones who really influence the way we do things. And, oh, good update from George Brandywine Museum. That's what it's called. I couldn't remember the name. Has a huge collection of all Wyeths plus access to Andrew Wyeth's studio. So if people don't know, Andrew Wyeth's father, I really hope I'm getting that right, N.C. Wyeth, incredible illustrator. I think he's a contemporary of Maxfield Parrish, another illustrator I love to death. And I mean, it's not common that you have a father and a son who are both that significant of an influence in the art world. I mean, just imagine the dinner conversations they must have had. But oh, I would love to see the studio. Okay, that would be a great studio visit. I want to go there for sure. And we also have, good, we're getting some support on the alcohol inks because I really just don't know about them at all. Right, affordable art fair. There's many types of art fair. So for example, oh, this would be a great art for the Outsider Art Fair. I would love to go to that. That's in New York City. And another one is, okay, I have to go to this one next year. It's the International Print Fair in New York City. And I went when I was a graduate student and I had no idea what I was getting into. So it's sort of like the big art fairs, except it's all print dealers. Oh, it's incredible because there's tons of contemporary art, but you can go to the art fair and you can buy a Kathy Kollowitz. You can buy a Picasso, which just floored me. I had no idea that was an option for anybody who wasn't a museum. And that just blew my mind. So I'm like walking into this print fair. There's like Kathy Kollowitz's and Picasso's, and they have prices on them. I'm like, what? I could just walk in here, get a Kathy Kollowitz and hang it on my living room wall? That just blew my mind. So that's one I definitely want to make the effort to go to. And hopefully I'll be able to raise enough funds to make that happen. And Janice, how about those outsider artists like Henry Darger? I confess, I feel like I know who that is, but for some reason, I can't remember what the work looks like. I feel like we included him on a stream somewhere. Anyway, that's something for me to look up later on. By the way, everybody, we are doing registration for our May and June workshops. That is due this Friday. So get in on the acrylic painting, flowers, printmaking party, pen and ink, collage and mixed media, and also landscapes and water. Workshops are an opportunity to work with me in real time. And guess what? They're 2 weeks. You get 2 weeks of written support and feedback and a 3-hour live session. It's not just a live session. Those 2 weeks of feedback, you get tons of support because I really like to get to know people before the workshop and the live session. Remember, we are doing a giveaway for Open Studios Club. Everybody in our Discord gets one free session. And we are going to do a Discord chat right after today's live stream. Join our Patreon group. This is where you get access to weekly voice sessions. You get long, nerdy critiques from me, support in a small group of artists. ArtProf has a podcast. It's available on Spotify and also on iTunes. Visit artprof.org. We have so much content on there that's not on YouTube. Type what you are looking for into the search bar. And subscribe to our channel for more tutorials, critiques, and business tips. Everybody, thank you so much for watching. I'll see you next time. Bye.